Good afternoon. Welcome in on The Mark. My name is Mark Carmen. You are Jake Valerius. Last day of the NBA regular season tanking comes to an end today. The playoffs are coming to Jake Valerius. But I want to start with tanking. I think it's a significant issue for the NBA, and I have a solution. So I know that you're not, you think the tanking is fine, correct?
Yeah, I just don't see what the problem really is. It's not like we have a shortage of interesting storylines in the NBA. You know, I could list off a whole ream of things that are keeping fans interested, not least this playoff race in the West where we got make or break games tonight for the Nuggets and Timberwolves.
Right, which is sweet because those teams are actually trying to win games. Teams trying to lose, the NBA does not want that. Adam Silver is not in favor of guys of you going out there and doing your absolute best to lose games, right? They don't.
I mean, I would reject that characterization a little bit. I don't think the guys on the floor are trying to lose. You know, you can't tell me that some of these, you know, take the Bulls, for example, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn. These are young NBA players trying to prove themselves in the league. They're playing hard for their next contract to get noticed, you know, to earn respect in the NBA. And so while the team are certainly making decisions that maybe aren't maximizing their potential, these individual players on the floor each night, they're going for it, man. They're trying hard.
Right, but if the teams, first of all, a lot of those guys like Chris Dunn, who you mentioned, exactly, and they've been sitting out with injuries. I mean, if it mattered, they'd be on the court. But they're not because they're tanking, so we're trying to lose. If Mark Cuban could go out right now and sign me and you to play guard for the Dallas Mavericks, if that was legal, he would do it. He's been saying all season long, we are trying to lose. This, if you're a season ticket holder and you're coming out to see the Dallas Mavericks or the Chicago Bulls, John Paxson, Gar Form running the show there, you want to see them actually compete. You don't want to see them try to lose. The Suns, Phoenix just clinched the worst record in the league, right? Josh Jackson and company, they just clinched the worst record in the league. And then they go out and they beat the Dallas Mavericks 124-97. Like, that just smells bad. It's ugly. The NBA does not want that.
I agree with that, but again, when we try to explain what exactly it is about tanking that bothers us so much, we sort of resort to these kind of vague general feelings like, it feels wrong that a team's not trying, you know, it doesn't pass the smell test, but the NBA is flourishing. You know, and it's not as if these teams making some of these decisions is depriving us of watching great basketball. If the Suns tried everything they could to win the season, they'd have won, what, 5 more games? They're not a good team, and they're tanking for a reason, and that reason is to make themselves a good team in the long run.
Right, but okay, but there's too much incentive to tanking, so like teams will build bad, they'll get rid of capable players to have really bad players so they'll lose lots of games. Like the Suns probably could have had a better roster. Maybe they would have won 10 more games and actually been a viable team for the season rather than a complete disaster. File Memphis under that umbrella as well, or into that cabinet as well. Here's what I want to do, okay? I want less incentive to tank. This is how I would do it, roughly. I'm still working out the fine details of this, Jake. But what I would do is you take everyone in the league, every single team, and however many losses you have, Suns with 61, Memphis has 59, Houston with 16, that's how many balls you get in the NBA lottery in my re-tanking Karm platform. Everyone, 61 losses, 61 balls. 59, 50, so you still have more likelihood, probability is on your side, okay? Then, instead of, like right now the NBA is switching their tanking rules from like 20, Phoenix has a 25% at the number one. Worst case scenario, they'll draft 4. Next year it moves to worst case scenario for a team is 5. But you can't drop out of the lottery. In my scenario, Phoenix or who's ever number one, you can drop all the way to 15. Like, it's way less, because you know, like, okay, worst case scenario, I'm picking fifth. Like, I still feel okay, comfortable, we're going to have a terrible season. And the other problem is the NBA, you only have 2 rounds in the draft. You know who the best players are. It's not like the NFL, 7 rounds, and you can get your standard, whatever, Tom Brady late round pick who turns into arguably the greatest pick of all time. That doesn't happen in the NBA. There's 40 rounds in baseball, you know, 38 round picks. And the NBA, on the whole, you know who's going to be good. So you need less incentive to be bad. And if you're all the way, like, I don't want, like, the Houston Rockets to move all the way up to 1, but I would say they could move up to, say, 20. And a first-round loser could move all the way up to, say, 15, something like that. So the bad teams, you can fall down farther, and the teams that are actually in can move up. Not all the way, but can, like, if you're a first-round loser, maybe, I don't know, 12, something like that. Basically balancing it out. So you are going to have more of a likelihood, but there's a lot less chance.
So you just want to decrease the likelihood that the worst team in the NBA wins the lottery?
I want everyone in the league. I think Adam Silver wants everyone in the league trying to win every night.
See, the problem with that to me is if you institute bats, so say the teams that don't make the playoffs are the only teams that could finish with the first pick after the lottery, however you decide to do the lottery. If we make that sort of limitation and we decrease the likelihood that the worst team in the NBA wins the lottery, to me, the bad side of that is potentially teams who are sort of on the bubble of trying are going to say, well, hey, why don't we just drop down because now we have a higher likelihood of winning? You know, if I'm the Nets, who are the, what, seventh worst team in basketball, eighth worst team in basketball.
Right.
The Nets, you know, they're coming into the last few months of the season and they're saying, oh, we've got a so-so chance of winning the lottery. Why don't we, you know, we got nothing to play for. We may as well, you know, the incentive is still there for them to increase their chances of winning, right? The more losses they have, the more likely it is they win the lottery. And not only is that the case, but if there's less likelihood that any one team loses or wins the lottery, then it increases the likelihood that teams will be like, all right, well, we still may as well just maximize our chances.
Right, but it's one ball. Like, if you lose 56 games, you get 56 balls. You get 57. And maybe, you get the mathematicians, or maybe you would multiply it out by, like, 4 times. But it's not a huge incentive. At the end of the day, the biggest incentive is to win.
But it is still an incentive. If Brooklyn, at whatever point it is that Brooklyn realize they're not going to make the playoffs, which in their case is probably going to be pretty early because they're not that good of a team, the incentive becomes to lose basketball games. This is what frustrates me about the debate, right? There is no way to eliminate the incentive to tank without removing the rule that says the worst teams get the best picks.
But
there is no way to do it. As long as we give better picks to worse teams, there is an incentive to lose basketball games.
But it's too, right now it's 25%. You can lower it down a lot.
I think watering it down doesn't really change much for me. If we're turning a bunch of 60 lost teams into a bunch of 56 to 58 lost teams, right, I don't care. That does not mean anything to me. It hasn't improved the quality of basketball. It hasn't meant that the people shelling out to go watch, you know, the Mavericks play this season. Has it really made any difference to these people's experience? There's only a finite number of wins in a given season. A lot of teams are going to be bad just because of the natural talent distribution of talent around the NBA. And you know, these sort of marginal gains, which are largely superficial as far as I'm concerned, are not going to result in an increase in the quality of basketball that would make any meaningful difference to anybody who actually cares enough about basketball to watch already.
Right, but at the end of the day, and we'll move on here, but at the end of the day, the NBA wants their teams competing. And
I think the NBA is in total, I think they're deluded. I think they need to accept the fact that this is the consequences of how they work. And, you know, we'll get onto this in a minute, but tanking has given us some of the best stories in the NBA this season, the Philadelphia 76ers chief among them. This team, which is one of the most exciting in the NBA, and we'll get onto that in a minute, but they exist because they tanked.
Yeah, they absolutely were atrocious for year after year after year, and the NBA just doesn't want it. One other cool story, by the way, from the tanking thing is that the LA Lakers brought up my guy, Andre Ingram, 32 years old. Hey, man, you can play the last two games of the year because we don't care. This guy, he's the 10 years in the G League, scored 19 points the other night, which is an incredible story for the oldest rookie to make his debut since at least 1964. I love that
story.
See,
tanking is great.
Oh, well, it's, it, the NBA does not want. I think I just gave a halfway decent solution for you. All right. Topic two for the show here. Let's talk about how everything is turning up LeBron James right now. You've got the Golden State Warriors are getting smoked by Utah. Steph Curry's going to miss the first round of the playoffs. Who knows what he's going to be when he comes back. Kyrie Irving, done for the year. He threatened that he was going to have this knee surgery if he had stayed in Cleveland. He goes to Boston, gets his way out of town, but then he can't make it through the season. So now the Celtics, who already lost Gordon Hayward, are not a threat in the East at all. The Toronto Raptors are your best team. Every time the Cavaliers play them, they wallop them. And then, you know, in the West, okay, Houston, but does anybody really even believe in the Rockets come playoff time that they're going to do this? So to me, like, everything's turning up LeBron. This is the ideal scenario. They reworked the team for him. They're better now. I think LeBron and company borderline the favorite going into the playoffs right now.
I disagree. I think they're the favorites in the East for sure.
For sure.
For all the reasons you said. Toronto's just a bad matchup for them. Toronto do not match up well with the Cavs. And so I think Toronto are, you know, give them credit. Like, I do think they've improved this year in ways people didn't really see coming. They're always kind of an afterthought. But, you know, they could win 60 games this season. If they win tonight, I think they could win 60 games, right? That's a big achievement. Good for them. But their biggest strengths are what? They're super deep. They got a really good bench. And they're really good on D.
I mean,
that's not going to work against LeBron playing 40 minutes a night in the playoffs.
Right. Fred VanVleet could be the sixth man of the year, but it's not going to play.
It isn't.
When your rotations get shortened. Like, the last thing LeBron is fearing right now is the Toronto Raptors, or I think anyone in the Eastern Conference. Now,
I would say that the team he fears the most in the East are the Sixers.
You think Philly?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So now you got a rookie in Ben Simmons going up against LeBron in the playoffs. You've got Joel Embiid, who may or may not stay healthy for the playoffs. And again, this is a totally inexperienced Sixers team going up.
Yeah,
but the
Cavs have significant health issues too. So I think we treat it as everybody who's healthy now is going to be playing. So we're saying Joel Embiid is ready to go. Simmons is ready to go. And what Joel Embiid has shown over his injury-riddled career so far is that when he's on the court, even if he's just coming back from an injury, he's unbelievably good. So, you know, add J.J. Redick in there, add Saric, you know, that's a really, really cool team. And I'm hoping that they stay 4-5 and they play each other in the first round, because that is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That would be a great matchup. But what probably is going to end up happening is the Cavs end up with a 3 seed. They get the dog meat Celtics in round 2. And then they're just waltzing into the finals, and we'll see how Steph comes back. Look,
I think you're being too dismissive of both Houston and the Warriors. Steph is going to miss the first round. Okay, all indications suggest he's going to be back for the second round. The finals doesn't start till June, late May. That's a month and a half from now. That's a long time for him to get back up to speed, for the Warriors to adjust into playoff mode. And by the way, even without Steph, the Warriors are a better team than the Cavs.
I don't think so. Not without Steph. Steph makes that engine go. If Steph's not playing, Golden State is not winning that series. He changes the whole dynamic of that team. He's
much better, don't get me wrong, but I still think we've been kind of lulled into a false sense of security with the Golden State Warriors. The same thing that happened to us with the Cavs last season. They just completely limped over the finish of the regular season. They weren't trying. They didn't care. It looked ugly. People were arguing, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, but
playoff start, different team. Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson is... LeBron is LeBron, okay. But after LeBron, that Cavs team is bad.
Yeah, but okay, but let me just focus on Steph here. I'll get off it in a second. But he's coming off 4 ankle sprains.
And what I'm telling you is they don't need him to be the best team.
I understand. Okay.
So you tell me about Steph doesn't fully affect how I think about this.
Okay, so we have a fundamental disagreement in that the Warriors need Steph Curry, and I'm not going to change your mind there. But coming off a knee surgery, it's not like you're coming off an ankle.
I'm not saying they don't need him. No question he makes them a significantly better team. They go from being a borderline favorite to the full-on favorite if he is healthy and ready to go. Having said that, I'm still not prepared to back against the Golden State Warriors without Steph gone. For me, as I've said many, many times, they are innocent until proven guilty with the team they have. They are outrageously good, playoff Kevin Durant is a joke. Draymond Green is a joke. Klay Thompson, not a bad third option to have. They're just really, well, really good. You know, I feel like we've forgotten how good this team is because they aren't trying right now.
I'll leave it at I'm skeptical that they can just flip the switch and everything is going to work out rosy for the Warriors considering everything they've gone through this season. If they do it, I'll hats off to them.
But everything that's happened in the season and you're telling me that LeBron's going to cruise through with a crappy Cavs team that have been hobbled, been awful through most of the regular season, and somehow this doesn't apply to the Cavs, but it does apply to the Warriors?
Well, the Golden, first of all, Cleveland's playing great basketball. I mean, they've been rolling.
Yeah, for a week.
Well, no. I would say since the trade happened, for the most part, they've been on a roll. And all I'm saying is, like, everything's turning. It may not work out for him, but with Stepford, Kyrie hurt, and the way they've reworked the roster, like, going in the playoffs, as far as I'm concerned, nothing could have worked out better for LeBron. He may not win it, but the scenarios that have painted themselves, this is incredible how it's turning out. Topic three, who do you think is going to be the biggest surprise of the NBA playoffs? Give me an upset in round one. Give me somebody that's standing at the end of the line. I wrote down Milwaukee and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I love the talent up there, and we don't know where the Bucks are going to be seated, and we don't know really where anyone's going to be seated except for the Rockets are one and the Warriors are two and Toronto's one in the East, and Boston's two. So who knows? But there's the Bucks. I suppose it's not a surprise, but to me it will be if they actually are this good in the playoffs and make it through to the finals and get by Golden State. That to me would be a stunner. And it would be a stunner for me if Toronto went through. Like, all that would be stunning. So, or the Sixers. I mean, who do you think actually is primed to do something special here?
The favorites. I mean, I know it's boring. It's hard to look beyond the best teams. If I am doing that, I'm intrigued by a Wizards-Toronto first-round matchup. John Wall back healthy, getting back up to speed. The Wizards have been really inconsistent and not that good this season. But talent-wise, that's a team that could go to the finals, the Eastern Conference Finals, sorry, yeah. Not the NBA Finals. So the Wizards, I'm sort of like, this is the sort of team that could maybe, if everything goes right, flip a switch in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In the West, I think you're being way too hard on Houston. I mean, where is this doubt coming from for you that they're not going to show up in the playoffs?
It's coming from years of watching James Harden go out in ugly ways and just dispirited.
But this is also just clearly the best team he's ever played on.
It is, but to rewind back to where we were just at, I mean, you still love Golden State.
I do. And I think it's because Golden State aren't trying. But again, you know, I think Houston are going to cruise to the finals.
Houston's going to cruise to the finals?
So I mean the Western Conference Finals. My apologies. Okay. I think I think they could sweep the first two rounds.
Okay.
I think after those two, the West is a collection of deeply flawed teams that are all kind of shooting themselves in the foot at the same time. And I think it's going to be Golden State, Houston in the Western Conference Finals. If Steph is still out by then, I think it's interesting. I lean in Golden State's direction, but I certainly think it's an interesting series. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm too new school in this approach, but I just don't buy this sort of choking thing about James Harden not showing up in the playoffs or Chris Paul not showing up in the playoffs. These are big-time players. You don't win the games they've won this season without being serious big-time players. And, you know, I'm excited to see that series. That, to me, is still the headline of the playoffs, this Houston-Golden State matchup in the Western Conference Finals.
And I don't mean to be saying choking. I'm just saying when defenses in the playoffs gear up and really strategize how they're going to cover Harden, they cause a lot of problems for him. It changes for him in the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to have some big moments here, but come playoff time, I still don't believe.
That's the thing. They have so many weapons, right? If you go to Harden, there's four knockdown three-point shooters spacing the floor,
right?
And he is better at finding them than anyone in the league other than probably LeBron.
If Houston's in the finals, I'll be surprised. Who do you like between to get at least second round? Pelicans, Spurs. So one of these teams.
A mess. It's ugly there.
Pelicans, Spurs, Utah. One of these teams is going to be here. Minnesota. Hopefully you guys get in tonight. They're.
I would actually, you know, I'm super depressed about this Timberwolves team as a fan. I think it's embarrassing that it's taken them the last game of the season and it's still up in the air. With the talent on that roster, they should be an easy 50-win team. And I think it's a pretty sad indictment of the management there that they're even on the fringe and they might not make the playoffs. So I'll say that about Minnesota. Having said that, their record against their rivals in the West is exceptionally good. The reason they're in this position is because they can't beat these crappy tanking teams. They lost to Memphis last week. If they didn't lose that game, they would not be in this position. That is horrific. You know, that is not a good look.
Jimmy getting hurt did not help.
It didn't help. But, even, I mean, you can't lose to Memphis, whether Jimmy Butler or anybody else is playing. They're trying to lose, like you just said earlier.
Right.
So having said that, though, very good against the better teams. Really good record against the Thunder. Really good record against against those other teams in the West. And if it comes to a seven-game series, they could still finish as high as, I think, fifth seed. So, you know, they would, I think, be a serious threat to make the second round. I like Utah a lot, like Rudy Gobert, like Ricky Rubio. I think that's a really fun team. Donovan Mitchell as well, obviously, you know, lights out this season. If I'm picking two, and we don't really know the seeding, so it's hard to say exactly, but if I'm picking two, if the Wolves make it, I'm going to say the Wolves, and I'm going to say Utah.
All right,
but they could play each other, so who knows?
I would love to see Minnesota get through. Let's switch over to baseball here, and if you've been paying attention, there was 900 people at a White Sox game this week. Now, it was moved from 7:10 at night to 1:10 because there was snow and freezing cold. The Yankees have been in snow. Minnesota's been playing in 35-degree weather. The season, everybody knows the season's too long. I have a solution for baseball in the cold. Actually, I have three solutions.
Okay.
You want to hear? Here's my three solutions. Number one, because you always try to play in warm weather in the first month anyway, just play the first month in Florida and Arizona. The crowds that you are going to get there are going to be very comparable to April in most northern cities, and you can still have your big opening day on May 1. So just stay in Arizona, and Florida, and let's play down there. You could fly back and forth National League, American League games. That's, you know, whatever, you're on a flight. We're going to Florida, we'll be there. That's one solution. Solution number two, get rid of the All-Star game, or at least move it to the end of the season, like after the playoffs. I don't care. That whole week in the middle of the season, at least I'm going to get a week. You back it up. Nobody cares about the All-Star game. I know it's a great celebration. Just get rid of it. That's one more week where you cannot move, because they're not going to come off 162. That's my solution number two. All right, and number three, very simple. Can we get you? They don't do doubleheaders anymore. That's fine. Just do the day night doubleheader. Let's throw it every Sunday. Let's have a day night doubleheader, or every Friday, maybe Friday night games. Right, that would be sweet. Let's play doubleheaders. You can expand the rosters those days. You can bring up three guys from the minors who will be your relievers. So yeah, those are my three solutions. More doubleheaders, back the season off. Play in Arizona. I like that one the most for the whole month. Florida, or just get rid of the All-Star game. Play it.
I think the last one is the only one that's even remotely feasible. I mean, you mentioned you're going to get better crowds in Florida.
In Arizona, yeah.
I'm not sure that I fully buy that. I mean, certainly the White Sox, those crowds, not a good advertisement for Major League Baseball, but also this is a bad team. It's the sort of worst case scenario for what baseball can look like in April when the weather is cold. But, you know, in terms of just stadium ownership, ticket price deals in these spring training venues, they're not as big as Major League stadiums.
Most of them seat like 15.
Exactly.
Good enough.
But I mean, even so, it's very difficult for me to imagine that a lot of teams are going to agree to that sort of thing. They still generate big revenue from having people in their stadium. They sell tickets and people don't show up, but they still sell tickets. You know, people buy those tickets. They can price season tickets more expensive because they have all these extra games, and changing it. You know, baseball as a sport generally is quite resistant to change, and I think something that radical is just a non-starter, basically.
Would you agree that something should be done?
I'm not sure I do.
March 29th.
I'm not sure I do. I could see pushing the season back, adding some extra doubleheaders, but this idea that baseball is a warm-weather sport just doesn't really stack up to me when the showpiece event of the sport is nicknamed the Fall Classic. Like, fall baseball is something we love. Postseason,
yeah, but
fall baseball, cold weather, We love it. We get jacked up for it. It's the best baseball of the year. You know, and they're playing in Cold City. Chicago won last year. The Indians have been to the World Series. You know, Astros in L.A. last year. Those are warm weather places. But, you know, almost every year we see important baseball, the most important baseball of the year, the most well, you know, televised and sold out baseball of the year we see in cold venues.
Which is why I think they should move the World Series.
And also, I just don't really buy this idea that 35 degrees, that's not cold. Come on.
Okay.
I live here. I walk around in it every day.
You
want to
go
bad.
Sit out there in 35 degrees and watch a baseball game? No, you don't. I'll answer
the
question.
No, I don't.
Right.
But some people do.
No, they really don't. They really don't. There's like seven of them out there.
I don't know. Play the season. I don't think 162 games is fine. That's part of the charm of the baseball season, you know?
All right.
Watching this every day, just an absolute slog.
Let's wrap up with Shohei Ohtani as we go out here on baseball.
See, great story from an early start to the baseball season.
That's true. Playing in warm weather. He had a perfect game into the seventh inning against Oakland. He's 2-0. He's got an ERA of 2.08. He struck out 18 batters. He's got 7 hits. He's got 7 RBIs. He hit a home run in 3 straight games. His Topps rookie card value has gone up $5,000 to over almost $7,000 now. This guy, I don't know where it's going, but if nothing else happens in baseball all season long, this dude is a tremendous story, like Babe Ruth-esque, the whole thing. It's really amazing. Shohei Ohtani, I love it.
Yeah, we were, before the season, we did our preview. I said, and I think you agree with me, if this was any other guy, he would have been sent to AAA after the spring training he has. Any other rookie on that contract who had that spring training. And it wasn't just people being like, oh, he was whiffing. I mean, scouts are talking about concerns about his, you know, swing, his approach, you know, this deeply technical stuff. Everyone's freaking out and just immediately settles in, looks like the best player in baseball.
I think they're going to figure him out at the plate. I'm going to stick with that. I don't like his swing, but I'm not a baseball scout, so I probably can be wrong about this. The pitching, if his arm stays healthy and doesn't fall off, I think the stuff's nasty.
All I want for him is there's going to be a slump. He's not going to continue this level because, I mean, no one can.
He's also going up against the A's.
Small sample size, exactly. He's also going up against the A's.
A lot.
When the slump comes, I'm going to say it's going to be severe, but even just when the numbers dip a little bit, you know, let's not just all turn on the guy. Because like you said, even if the baseball season ended right now, this would be an amazing thing. He's breaking records that we haven't seen since the 30s in Babe Ruth. That is outrageous. You know, that is something everyone should be on board with. Everyone should be a Shohei Ohtani fan. And even if you're not, good for him for being like the first good teammate Mike Trout has had in 5 years. So everyone's a winner down there.
Covered a lot on today's show. We fixed tanking.
No, we didn't.
We told you that Cleveland's going to win the NBA title.
No, they won't.
We said that Minnesota's going to be a huge surprise in the NBA playoffs.
If they make it.
We eliminated a month of the baseball season. Not eliminated, but we have it to play in Arizona. These are all my thoughts, obviously.
I don't like any of your thoughts.
And Shohei Ohtani's God. It's great to be with
you. I agree with that.
We'll see you next week. Wednesdays at noon on The Mark. And thanks for checking us out on iTunes as well.